There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 904, September 20th, 2021. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and surfing regards from Santa Cruz, California.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Herta dominates Laguna. Alonso says they did what they should do. So there you go. Leave him alone. Russell is ready to take on El Machismo at Mercedes. We got Gary Sloan back for his monthly installment of InThePitLane.com. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Going total Cali this and next week. And nice to see Left Coast is same as it was. And will I see the charming host tomorrow morning for breakfast in Santa Cruz?
I'm going to do the best I can. We'll discuss that after we record our wonderful podcast number 904.
Man, I'm very excited. We are heading towards Arabian Nights 1001 podcast. That will be super, super awesome. So how are things for you, sir?
Everything is wonderful. We live in California, so therefore we are Californians.
There you go. Well, you know, I am here since Friday night. I had quite a adventure on my flight here, but, you know, we're not going to bore people with that. But Sunday, Mr. Rogers, I got some much-needed racing fix. It's good to be in a racing environment, hear the sound of racing engines, and these Indy cars, they sound pretty good and they look very good. And most important, we had the opportunity of hot dog at Laguna Seca with F1 Weekly Familia members Mr. Philip Pegler. And Mr. Pegler sends all his Nathan's regards to you, and also Mr. James Trumpur. And you know who these two youths are. And man, I have to say, Laguna Seca is a beautiful track. Nice elevation changes, just like Brands Hatch. And the corkscrew section is simply marvelous. We walked around the track during the race, which, as you said, was dominated by Colton Herta. And Monsieur Romain Grosjean also got on the podium with a little push and shove and dusty Springfield action, so that was good to see. And sir, next weekend, Moa will be in SoCal, and so happy that we will have another get-together with more members of F1 Weekly Familia. Long Beach Grand Prix is normally the season opener, but thanks to COVID, everything has been turned upside down, and this season it is the final race. Sir, you've been a long-time California resident. Did you ever go to Long Beach when they used to do Formula One?
In those days, I was just a spring chicken, and the drive down to Long Beach is sort of hectic, and I had a job to go to as a young, upcoming French entrepreneur. Da!
Yes, sir, I will be having flashbacks of my old days, because it will be at 5 in the morning. Last few years, I'm used to watching races at 8 in the morning on the Righteous Coast. What say you? Who would you like to see win apart from Fernando Alonso?
Just Fernando Alonso. Everybody else, I really don't give a damn about.
Not even Esteban Ocon, your homeboy and Alpine driver?
No. He's sort of annoying, but that's because I'm very sensitive. It's going to be the usual schlemiel, schlemazel, Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated. So what can you do? Hopefully Putin will be there, because without Putin, it's really not official. We know what's going to happen, who's going to take out who, and really that's the title of every Grand Prix that's going to be in our future, is who's taking out who and who's our new winner.
Well, you know, every Grand Prix in Russia, pre and post Vladimir Lenin, has been won by a Benz. Now we have a modern-day Vladimir in office, and both Mercedes drivers have tasted success and vodka in Sochi. I think it's time for a Heineken happy hour this weekend. But it is expected Red Bull will take the engine change penalty here, and if that happens, victory will be out of question in normal circumstances. But normal circumstances are pretty unnormal these days, this season. I still see him on the podium because of the package he has and how, you know, quick he is. So it will come down to either LCH taking pole and Century of Wins, which has been on hold, as you mentioned last time, on the Russian front, or Bottas, who won his first race here, takes pole position and the expected phone call. Well, Terry, this is James. It will be nice to see the red cars do some hustling at the front in the land of the Reds, and we will see how it goes. Now, Nikita Mazepin will have a lot of new motivation racing on home soil and in front of comrade Putin, the modern-day Vladimir. I am curious how many laps he will take before he launches Operation Uranus against teammate from Germany, Mick Schumacher. I mean, I think we can count on Nikita creating at least one caution period, and that will definitely help Max if he is starting from the back. Any other mayhem you predict?
No, Mazepin is definitely going to be a hot topic. I believe our friend Gary Sloan will be talking about Mazepin and the family in the Gary Sloan segment in the pitlane.com. It's going to be interesting, but you're right. I think Red Bull will have to take their engine penalty this weekend. The big question is, how many points can Max gather? And really, is Valtteri Bottas' middle finger, is it all warmed up? Is he ready to give the shaft to everybody at Mercedes and do what he wants to do, not follow orders? And he could actually win this Grand Prix. Valtteri loves Sochi, and that's the way it is. So two scenarios can happen. Valtteri wins and dominates Sochi, or Mercedes is going to dominate, which is not unusual since they dominated all of our Russian Grand Prix in the past. And I think Lewis Hamilton will actually get this 100th Grand Prix out of the way. He'll get pole, he'll win, and then we can move on. He'll take control of the championship, and Red Bull has got a lot of things to keep on the table without zigzagging.
Well, you know, even if he takes pole, even if he's dominating the race, what we have here is championship at stake. So he will get that, you know, Bottas or Valtteri, this is James, call. And if he does not behave and wants to do a René Arnoux a la Paul Ricard 1982 or Reutemann in Rio, in 1981, I believe it was, then issues can be resolved when he comes into the pit lane. And I think it will be, you know, it's most likely if Lewis gets his victory and his 100th Grand Prix win, most likely he will retake the championship lead by a point or two or whatever. So this thing is going to just seesaw till we go to the Yas Marina, which is very exciting. And I definitely don't want to see the season finale end in a kablamo or, you know, let's get physical. So let's see how this thing pans out. It's very, very exciting. And I'm sure you know Russian Grand Prix, I believe, I don't know if it's 2022 or 2023, but it's departing Sochi and moving to Mr. Putin's hometown, St. Petersburg. So that should be interesting. And apparently that track is much nicer. This is like the Russian version of Yas Marina. All show, not much to go, but that's just a personal opinion. Okay, sir, there has been a lot of chatter on the web on the mayhem at Monza. Lips are moving, slings and arrows are shooting, and this will allow us to present Meet the Press. Sorry, NBC. And let's take a look what the global motorsports media is saying about this issue. Now, I'm sure you know this famous Italian newspaper, La Gazzetta dello Sport. Their comment was, the battle between them has become a brutal war, which will become part of Formula One history like Senna and Prost. Interesting. Another Italian newspaper, Corriere della Sera. They say the rivalry has gotten out of hand with chaos, mutual accusations, and the giant egos of the two star pilots. Do you think Lewis and Max have giant egos?
I think Max has a giant ego. Lewis is too humble and wonderful to be accused of a giant ego.
Exactly. Totally agree with you. Okay, sir. Spanish publication La Vanguardia said, this is a fight between two monsters who hate each other. And Mr. Rogers, I thought the Spanish media knew only one monster who is sponsored by Monster. And who can that be, Mr. Rogers? Or would you call him the lucky monster?
I would call him the most wonderful person in the world.
Well, you know, I've never sat down and chatted with Lewis Hamilton, but I did congratulate him in Austin media room a few years ago when he won the championship and had a brief chat with him, which was, I think, only the second time I met him briefly. And both times he was very polite. And most of the people who have met him, and I know quite a few industry media people who have met him, they all say the same thing. So, and I've met and interviewed Max several times, and I feel the same about him also. I mean, he's young and aggressive, but he has been nothing but polite. So we have two good drivers, very good drivers, and I think two good youths duking it out. Okay, now we hear from Christian Danner. He said, Verstappen's move on Hamilton, for which he has been penalized three places on the Sochi grid, was personal and a case of psychological warfare. You know, Max's first comment to his team after landing on top of Lewis's car was, that's what happens when you don't give any room, or words to that effect. Which basically tells me, I'm not going to say he did it intentionally, but basically tells me that he said, let's go for it and see what happens. If I come out ahead, great. If we end up in the kitty litter, I'm still leading the championship. What's your take on this issue, sir?
I agree with Fernando Alonso, the Yogi Berra of Formula One. They both did what they should do. They're fighting for the championship. And at this stage, both of them have their testicles hanging out down low. And none of them is going to give. Because if you give, then you look like a wimpy man. So it's going to go down. There's going to be more accidents. I think the person with the most intellect and experience really should win this. But unfortunately, with the penalties and with these ridiculous engine rules, once again, I think the person who changes the engine the least and has the least penalties wins the championship.
Yeah, but you know, Max has won 70% of the races. I'm sorry, 50% of the races so far. And if he does not win, it'll be a shame. And if Lewis does not win, that'll be a shame too, because number 8 would be an incredible achievement. But, you know, for all practical purposes, Mr. Rogers, we're basically touching October now. And so this season is coming to a grand finale. So we'll see how it works out. Okay, Alex Wurz, who used to drive in Formula One as Le Mans winner, he said, for me, it's a racing incident with 70% of the responsibility on Max. Now, Dutch driver, ex-Dutch F1 driver, Christian Albers, he is asking for trouble at home. He said, realistically, Max shouldn't have been there at that moment. But that's just Max. He saw a gap. He has been trained and raised that way from an early age. We are in the same situation as Prost and Senna, and it is now up to the FIA to draw the line. And very surprisingly, Jan Lemmers, who is fellow Dutch to both Albers and Max, and boss man at the circuit park Zandvoort, he said, what I can imagine is that Max might have thought, if I don't win, then neither do you. Max knew that if he didn't intervene, he would lose points. So there you have it, different views and opinions from around the world, from around the motorsports world. And I think we will have to put it in the back, just like we have forgotten about the wonderful high-speed action we had at Spa and move on and see what comes at the Russian Grand Prix. Do you remember any exciting Russian Grand Prix so far, frankly speaking?
Not a one.
Same here. Same here. So it will be a boring race, and I think the only excitement will come if somebody can take out somebody, and then we'll have to see if Lewis can win. And see, what Max will have problem is if he starts from the back, he'll have to pass the two Ferraris and the Aston Martin, and somebody will become a pain for him, and then he will lose a lot of time, just like Alonso. I was watching the Hungarian Grand Prix yesterday, and Alonso cost somebody a win. How sad that is. But you must be happy.
I'm sure that you're mistaken. Alonso is a professional and would never harm another F1 driver's chances.
No, he has never done that. He only harms one driver, and driver, he sees that every morning when he goes for his head and shoulder shampoo, rinse and repeat. But anyway, sir, we are moving on now. Kimi, R&R, meaning Raikkonen in Russian Grand Prix on Sunday. As we all know, the ice age will melt away in Yas Marina, and the most experienced driver and one of the greatest natural talents to race in Formula One will be leaving with just one championship. And the moral of that story is, can't take a taxi to Timbuktu, can't win a championship with an engine from GP2. Boy, no matter how you spin it, there's Alonso on the other side. Next, sir, we come to, I heard the news today. Oh boy, this was very, very strange and bizarre. A Formula One fan from Liverpool, England, was arrested at gunpoint in the Netherlands after the Dutch Grand Prix, after being mistaken for a mafia boss. Now, the police believe the 50-year-old man, known as Mark L., was Sicilian crime lord Matteo Messina Denaro, and he was blindfolded and led away by officers in The Hague on Wednesday, and the poor guy was having dinner with his son. Prosecutors said the man, who was in the country to watch the Dutch Grand Prix, was later freed, and he did not want, you know, his name or face to be published, which I understand. Now, Signor Denaro, he is 59 years old. He is wanted over bombings in 1993, which killed 10 people and injured over 90 people. So he must be hiding somewhere in Palermo or Campo Felice, close to the Targa Florio track. And this guy, there is a European arrest warrant issued by the Italian authorities. And the man who was arrested, his lawyer, had a very interesting comment to say. And I quote, "It would have been a genius of an Italian to have such a strong Liverpool accent." End of quote. Can you imagine Flavio Briatore sounding like David Croft?
Well, I've heard Flavio sound like David Croft only once. That was at the end of the 2006 season.
My classic Flavio moment is when he was at the 2005 US Grand Prix. Shortly after the race started, he was caught on camera saying to somebody very excitedly, "I predict Schumi first, Barrichello second. You want to bet?" So that was Flavio. Okay, sir, now talk about a kinder and gentler nation. DC does hard landing on Yuki. DC said in an interview that he was very surprised. Yuki said that he was very surprised that he was retained by Red Bull for 2022 in their junior team, of course, because, as he said, "I kept crashing and cost the team a lot of money." To which DC responded, "What planet is he from? I think he should pack his bags and go home, because those are not the words of a racer. If I was him, I would book a plane ticket now and get it fairly cheap, because he won't be in Formula One at the end of 2022. End of quote. Well, we don't wish anybody ill will at F1 Weekly, as we all know, or should know by now. But I have to agree with DC. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda is very quick, but he's not the only quick driver who came into Formula One and made a kibosh of his own career. There have been quite a few. So that'll be a shame, but you have any thoughts on what DC said, sir?
DC makes me laugh every day. DC is still sort of stuck behind the Trulli train, you know, and he's still getting a little frustrated back there, you know, going, damn it, damn Yarno Trulli. But don't worry, DC, you'll get past eventually. It just takes a little time. So keep up the good work, DC. I want to thank him for those lovely words about Yuki. Don't worry, when you have Honda behind you, you can have accidents and crash and still be signed. So leave the kid alone. On that note, why don't we hear from InThePitLane.com's Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this month's edition of In the Pit Lane. So as the F1 circus moves on to Sochi for the next round, Russian President Vladimir Putin will no doubt be pleased the Haas cars could circumvent the ban on drivers racing under the Russian flag with the adoption of Russian-themed livery. The irony, of course, is Haas arrived on the F1 scene with the emphasis on the team being Formula One's American team. Much has been written and said about why Gene Haas remains in Formula One, with various theories doing the rounds. One school of thought is Gene Haas turned down the more than generous offers tabled back in 2019 by both the Saudis and Dimitri Mazepan from a patriotic standpoint, wanting to ensure an American team remained on the grid. Well, the patriotic angle can now be dismissed as news emerges that Michael Andretti's Andretti Autosport approached Gene Haas to buy the team, only to be turned down. Andretti Autosport is in the process of raising $287 million to top up its available spending pot to a whopping $400 million. Andretti Autosport is a serious player running a four-car Indy team, a Formula E team with BMW, a four-car Indy Lights team, and an MP3 car in the ISMA sports car series. But undeterred by Gene Haas's rebuttal, Michael Andretti confirmed a continuing interest in F1, telling Racing Magazine, "If the right opportunity comes up, we'll be all over it, but we're not there yet. It would be great, but there's a long way to go if it were to happen." So instead of selling, Gene Haas took Mazepan's sponsorship rubles in return for Junior's race seat and, of course, the opportunity to brand the cars. Well, Mazepan Sr. may or may not be disappointed with Nikita's performance today, but he's apparently delighted with the global exposure his company Eureka has received. The sponsorship has been instrumental in opening doors and has resulted in new business that has more than recouped his investment. The world's biggest fertilizer producer has just got even bigger, and this may have increased his desire to own a Formula One team, not only for his son's career, but for the business opportunity the F1 presents, not dissimilar to Lawrence Stroll's F1 journey. Well, if he wants to buy an existing team, options are limited, with Williams and Sauber being the only candidates, but for different reasons, both are pretty much out of the running. So the million-dollar question, or more accurately, the multi-million dollar question, is would Mazepan start a new team with all that involves? Well, Liberty Media would like to expand the number of teams on the grid after the pandemic has ended. And Ross Braun commented to the Russian broadcaster RT in July 2020, "If there was interest from a Russian team or any other one that we thought was sustainable, then we'd be fully open to exploring the opportunity." Well, one option for Mazepan would be to join forces with fellow Russian billionaire Boris Rautenberg, founder of the Russian bank SNP. SNP Racing has a host of Russian drivers on its books, including ex-Williams F1 driver Sir Georgi Sergotin and rising star Robert Schwarzman. Rautenberg is a confirmed petrol head and raced in a variety of series from 2011 to 2014. And he is interested in forming an all-Russian Formula One team using SNP Racing. He made clear his intentions back in October 2019 at the Russian Grand Prix when he said, "The more you try to create in motorsport, the more chance you have to flourish. Do we want to create a Formula One team? I think the more teams there are, the more opportunities there will be for our drivers. Everything is possible. The main thing is to make the effort. First of all, there are the financial considerations." Well, that's where the two might join forces, Mazepan's billions and Rotterberg's expertise. Who knows, but time will tell. That's it for another month. Till next time, stay safe, stay well. More details at GarySloan.com.
Gary, thank you. The check's in the mail. And why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Okay, I'm here with one and only Bobby Unser, great American legend. Bobby, you started your career in Roadsters, front engine, then you saw Jim Clark and Colin Chapman came here, and then came the young guns, Rick Mears, Michael Andretti. Racing changed a lot in that time frame. What were the changes that you liked, and what were the changes that you did not like?
Well, the changes that I liked was that there was a lot of innovations in those days, and you could dream up an idea, think of one, make it, develop it, and have something over the other cars. And that was just the 60s and the 70s was of course the golden years of racing, and it was world over, not just the United States. And unfortunately, then they started getting so much technology, the rules makers couldn't keep up with the engineers, and cars are becoming spec cars. And that's what's sad. Computers have taken over the drivers. The drivers are becoming less heroes. The engineers and the computers are becoming the heroes, and the people don't like it, the fans don't like it. And that's the part I don't like.
Now, talking about engineering, I've spoken to some people for whom you drove, team members, and they always said that you were a very hands-on kind of driver. Did you drive team owners and members crazy?
I absolutely did, but it wasn't in a bad way. I mean, I made race cars go fast. I became a self-taught engineer, and I became quite good at it. And I always did my own chassis setups. I never trusted somebody else, and it wasn't that you had distrust in your mechanics. It's just that if you had hands-on, and then you drove the car, then you really knew what was better or what was worse and why it was better or worse. So I think that that was largely some of the advantages that I had for a lot of years. And still today when I do things.
Who were some of your toughest competitors?
Oh, the whole bunch of them. Gosh, I'd have to have an old list. But I mean, just look at my brother and Foyt and of course, Parnelli, who's here today, is the one that took me to Indianapolis and made a lot of my opportunities available for me. But there were so many guys, Mario, Roger McCluskey, Don Branson. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to have some old books to go back and tell you they were tough race drivers.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the Sultan, the King himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. We shall start with MotoGP, the San Marino Grand Prix at Misano Adriatico. Three Ducatis in the top five. Very impressive showing in front of Paisan. Their winning rider was local lad Francesco, also known as Paco Bagnaia. French rider Fabio Quartararo was second for Yamaha, still leads the championship. This is a new name for me, Ennea Bastianini. He was the second Italian on the podium, also riding a Ducati. Mark Marquez was highest place Honda rider in fourth, with Ducati's Aussie mate Jack Miller completing the top five. This was round 14. Sir, round 15 will be the Red Bull Grand Prix of America in Austin, Texas in October. So coming up soon. You know, I think the MotoGP race would be a lot of fun to watch at COTA, especially the SS section, which is very, very nice. Okay, sir, IndyCar racing from Laguna Seca. I had a very good time, sir. Did you watch the race?
Yes, sir. It was on television, and it was interesting because I've been to a Laguna Seca race many, many times. But whenever you watch stuff on TV, you get completely different angles that you don't see when you're at the track. So it's always amusing and very fulfilling to watch Laguna Seca.
Yeah, the track is fantastic. And, you know, when you are there, then you really see the elevation changes, the corkscrew and the back stretch, you know, which goes towards the corkscrew. Absolutely beautiful. And you have taken rides in a car around this track, right?
Of course, sir. I'm the host of F1Weekly.com.
Yes, it's very, very nice. I really like it. Yeah, I remember watching the races in 80s and 90s. And Bobby Rahal, I remember Bobby Rahal, he won four times here. I believe it was four times in a row, but I do remember one race very well, where late in the race he outbraked in the last corner. Jeff Brabham took the lead and went on to win. So if anybody who is visiting Northern California has not been to this track, I would highly recommend. It's not too far from Monterey Peninsula, which is a very nice part of this country. So please come on down and check it out. Okay, sir, we already mentioned the result. And, you know, the Indy Lights, this young kid from Jupiter, Florida, Kyle Kirkwood, is doing very well. He's leading the championship. And I think he could be the next big American talent like Colton Herta and some of the, you know, people who went on to big success, Rick Mears, and, of course, Michael Andretti was extremely successful here. Okay, sir, we move on to Assen in Netherlands, DTM. Top three in race one, Marco Wittmann. Once upon a time, he was managed by Willy Weber, and then when he was in Formula BMW Europa, Esteban Gutierrez rained on his and everybody else's parade, and that pretty much ended his F1 aspiration. Second is a gentleman I know I've met many times also, not just in Europe, but here at Daytona also, Mirko Bortolotti. He's Italian, but grew up in Vienna. He, I think, is the only driver that I know of that within a span of 12 months, he was dropped first by Red Bull program and then by Ferrari program. So that was not good. And third is a gentleman from New Zealand who I think is very, very good, Liam Lawson. And Liam Lawson is also racing with Red Bull in Hapedos, now known as Efedos, Formula 2. In fact, he won the very first race that he entered this season, so that's very impressive. Race 2 was won by Lucas Auer. He is the nephew of Gerhard Berger, and Gerhard Berger is the head honcho of the organization that organizes DTM. In the championship, Lawson is leading 175 points, 10 points ahead of Marco Wittmann. And Alexander Albon, coming back in Formula 1, is 6th in the championship. I don't know, sir, if you talk much about Alexander Albon coming back into Formula 1. Surprise for you? Are you expecting some fireworks from him? Or what say you?
Well, it's hard to say what I'm going to expect because we have a new car in 2022. Is Williams going to come out of the box fighting for the top 10 in 2022? They got the motor. They have a motor. They've had the motors from Mercedes for years and haven't been able to do what McLaren is doing with the Mercedes or what Mercedes is doing with the Mercedes. So I don't know. It's all up in the air for 2022. I am just surprised that he's getting that chance. But Toto is such a loving father figure for a lot of these drivers. And I don't know what's going on in the background. But some of the legal ease in Albon's contract is so complicated that they've sent it to the Einstein Institute.
Yeah, but you know, Red Bull is a 59-41 joint venture between Dietrich Mateschitz and people from Red Bull. You know, Red Bull was originally a Thai drink. And these people, the Thai multi-billionaires, they are supportive of Albon. So when you have people like that or Carlos Slim helping Checo Perez, and of course these two drivers are also very talented, so it's no surprise that he's back in racing. But he will be with Williams, and I think that he will shine very well against Nicholas Latifi. So we shall see. Now, Mr. Rogers, we are moving forward to your favorite series, NASCAR or Le NASCAR. You know, at one time a few years ago, NASCAR ratings were second only to NFL in this country and were almost on par, a wee bit ahead of Major League Baseball, which was an absolute incredible achievement by the France family. And they've made some changes. Now, preseason is called spring training. What was Chase for the Cup is now playoff. So they're trying to be something they are not. And now they have announced, this was interesting, that they will do the clash. You know, they used to have the Goodies clash, the Bush clash. They're going to do this at the LA Coliseum, believe it or not. The playing field, the playing surface will be converted into a quarter mile asphalt short track. Quarter mile short track. So the question is, what's next? Pepsi 400 at Pebble Beach? Talk about target marketing. What say you, sir? A race at the NASCAR race at the LA Coliseum on a quarter mile track?
Well, I mean, if you had told me it's going to be at the Florida State Seminoles Bobby Bowden Stadium, would have made perfect sense to me. But to bring this to California, mind blowing to say the least. Quarter mile pretty much means as you're making the left turn, you can actually see yourself. making the next left turn. It's interesting, but it's a phenomenon known as NASCAR space travel. So a quarter mile is scary to even think about, but when you put in the time and space continuum, and if you have Jean-Luc Picard there, then it could be interesting. If not, it's going to be terrible.
You know, some years ago, my friend and I, we were traveling through Phoenix, Arizona, and we decided to go to Phoenix International Raceway, which is a one-mile oval. So we, you know, climbed up the hill, looked at the track, and, you know, how long can the straight be on a one-mile oval? And we both looked at each other, and my friend said, can you believe racing here? And you remember the famous comment from Bernie Ecclestone about a mile-long Phoenix International Raceway.
My favorite.
Yes, so I wonder what he will call this quarter-mile track. But anyway, you got to do what you got to do. And so speaking of marketing, the NASCAR Cup Series round from Richmond on NBCSN averaged a 1.07 Nielsen rating, which is 1.7 million household viewers. Okay, now check this out in comparison. The live telecast of the Italian Grand Prix on ESPN2 averaged 0.53, which has been the story of Formula One in the U.S. And then this was really surprising to me. The IndyCar race for Portland, Oregon, which was the same weekend as Monza, I believe, their rating was 0.43, which is less than Formula One. More people watching Formula One in the U.S. than IndyCars does not speak very well for IndyCar racing. And at least it's just one race. Any of those numbers surprise you?
No, and unfortunately, IndyCar is famous for their camera work, which is great, but the cameramen in IndyCar are trained, and they've grown accustomed to it, to rarely pan into the audience. I mean, I waited for a shot of the grandstands at Laguna Seca for a long time. Briefly came, very few people, and it left. But, you know, they do have the Indy 500. Whenever they're at IMS, they draw a good crowd. I think St. Pete draws a good crowd. You know, Indy is, it's a give and take. You know, some places they're well received, but it just doesn't draw a crowd. And incisive destruction of the mouth. So, I don't know. But I like IndyCar. I like Formula One. And if you want to make a lot of money in the American television system, do not prescribe to what I watch, because what I watch is dead on arrival. But F1 and IndyCar has always struggled, and NASCAR, who I think is struggling now, has always been in the limelight.
Yeah, well, things have changed. You know, I was there on Sunday, and the crowd was not as big as it used to be, and, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but given the circumstances, the crowd was pretty good. And I'm going to tell you, once upon a time, I went to the IRL race at Fontana. And let me just tell you, the grandstands, they look like the big advertising board for Alcoa. I mean, that was an empty space. And that was very sad. But I got news for, you know, how the IndyCar Civil War screw up the open wheel competition here. And I always say this to people when we talk about this, you know, NASCAR has become so big. I don't know if I was in Southern California on a Sunday or I was at a race, could have been Laguna Seca. But anyway, there used to be this program, remember Speed Week on ESPN?
One of my favorite shows.
With Larry Neuber and Bob Jenkins? Yeah, absolutely. It was very good. It used to come at 9 o'clock California time, Sunday evening. So I was rushing back so I can, this is before DVR days, or at least I didn't have a DVR at that time. So anyway, I got there just in time, and I will never forget this. They had Formula One, Indy Cars, IMSA Sports Car, and also WRC. And at the tail end of the program, they said, the NASCAR race, I think it was a race in Texas, and I remember it was won by Dale Earnhardt Sr. And now it's just the reverse. But be careful what you wish for, just might come true. Okay, sir, now, finally, we have a situation interesting. Oscar performance, but no seat in the F1 theater. You know, there is this kid Oscar Piastri from Australia, Melbourne, Australia, and he is managed by Mark Webber, and he is doing very well. Last year, he won the F3 Championship. Prior to that, he won the Formula Renault Euro Cup. And this year, in Formula 2, on the opening weekend, Liam Lawson wins on his debut. Piastri wins the second race of the first weekend, and he's now leading the championship against many drivers who are in their second, third year, which includes two Ferrari Academy drivers, Marcus Armstrong, who is also from New Zealand, and Robert Schwartzman from Russia. And then there is this guy from China, Guan Yu Zhu, and we interviewed him a few years ago. The reports are, chatter on the web, that Guan Yu Zhu will be the driver who will be teammate to Valtteri Bottas at Alfa Romeo next year. Apparently, he's bringing $30 million from his Chinese backer. So, you know, good for him. But so now, what does Oscar do? You know, if you win the Formula 2 championship, or previously known as GP2, if you win the championship, you cannot race in the series, which I think is a good idea. So Oscar said, I've had a few suggestions of purposely not winning it to do another year, but that's just silly, and I want to win the championship. And I have to agree with him. He should win the championship. It's still some races to go. But Mark Webber, he can get him a ride somewhere in Japan or maybe do some IndyCar racing. I wish him well. But this guy is very, very talented. We've seen a lot of drivers in the last 2-3 years. They were promising a lot in Formula 4, Formula 3. But, you know, when you come to the final frontier, most of them do choke out. But this kid has not, so I would really like to see him do well and move on to bigger and better things. Anything else, sir, before we do Musical Mondial?
Well, the Musical Mondial means that we're heading to the dinner table and preparing. And I have to admit that I'm looking forward to another episode of Will They or Won't They? So it's going to be great. This could become a routine on the David Letterman show. Oh, wait a minute. There is no David Letterman show. But anyway, yes. Will they clash or will they not clash? I mean, I don't care if there's a grid penalty. You know, these two guys are going to have to say hello and goodnight at the track. So it's going to be interesting, but I do predict that it's going to be weird. Something weird is going to happen and Fernando's going to win.
No, I agree with you. These two drivers, Max and Lewis, will clash again, maybe more than once. And the thing is, you know, even if Max has a grid penalty, starts from the back, there could be a caution and the field bunches up and, you know, opposites attract. So they will find each other just like they did at the last race. But going to back to our musical selection today, sir, this is a very one of the most famous Russian tunes. And I absolutely love this tune. And it's also the what they call in the shortwave radio business, a signature tune of Radio Moscow. The song is actually called Evenings in the Countryside of Moscow, but commonly is known as Moscow Nights, and it's been covered by several American groups also. And this is from the James Last Orchestra, so please listen, enjoy, and thank you for your support. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.